Thanks for bringing the church into this place. My name's Brian. We're going to go ahead and take our offering right now. So guys, come on down and serve us. And I'm looking for my notes, my announcement notes, which I can't find. So I'm going to try to do this by memory, which means I probably will miss some things. But actually, it's less of announcing new things that are coming up and more celebrating some really cool things that have happened. But I'm curious about this. By way of hands, how many of you ladies were at the ladies' retreat this weekend? Okay, awesome. Actually, there were more at the 9 o'clock, which really surprised me, some early rising ladies. So we had a group of women that just put together this conference and heard awesome things about it. I kind of high-fived my wife this morning in passing as she was coming in the door and I was going out, and I just heard cool things. But again, it was kind of like run by a team of women from our church that just wanted to do that. Now, last Sunday night, how many guys at the Super Bowl party? Yeah, a lot of guys there. Phenomenal time just to hang out, watch what turned out to be a good game, eat some awesome food that wasn't good for our bodies, but man, did it taste good. And it was just an awesome time, right? And so that event was organized by Keith Kirkland, our lead worshiper, who I think is sick today. But just said, hey, I want to do Super Bowl party. We said, yes, let's do a Super Bowl party. Okay, now, also this week, I was up at the Hudson campus, trying to find my notes, can't find it. Okay, Hudson campus, and the people up there from like all the different CCC campuses were saying, boy, Highland Square, what are you guys doing with social media? Because it's awesome. And then the next question was, whoever's doing that, can they do ours, right? We said, no. You can't, and yes, it is awesome. So Stacy, who is just a part of our church, who is good at doing social media, is just doing it, right? She just kind of said, hey, I'll do that, and I'll take it, and I'll run, right? And you guys look up at our band, we see like so many new faces that are on instruments doing a phenomenal job, right? We got new, just kind of people coming out of the woodwork, right? So there's this theme where I'm starting to see like we as a church, we're becoming a functional team. Which is what a church is. It's a body, right? One body, many parts. And then something that's coming up, this thing called Grace Talks. I don't know, it's probably like a month and a half ago. Selena came and said, hey, I've got this idea for this thing I think we need to do. It's called Grace Talks. We get some of our people speaking on topics that are passion to them to inform us and provoke us and encourage us as a church. And it's something that we were thinking about doing at some point as a staff, but like we just didn't have the bandwidth to do it at that moment. And so Selena said, hey, I'd like to do this. And we said, yes. And so Selena's just running this thing, right? So like just we're starting to just kind of like do and to become the individuals that God made us to be, which essentially then benefits all of us, right? We all win when we as individuals do the thing God made us to do. So that's also an announcement to set aside your last Sunday of the month for Grace Talks. It's going to be really cool. I've seen kind of a list of the topics that are coming and who's going to be speaking, all people from this church, right? It's going to be a really cool thing. So just want to let you know that that is happening. Is there anything else that I was going to say? Oh, yes, here's the last thing, right? So regarding individuals doing the thing that God made them to do. So for a month and a half or so, I was working on the Black History Month, the 4 weeks, and I knew at week two, there were three paths that I was going to describe for us, and the two paths I named, right? And I knew what they were, and I was very comfortable with them. But the third path, I couldn't define what that was. I knew what it was like, but I couldn't articulate like how to describe it for you guys. And then so and it's like it eluded me for a month and a half. And then last Sunday after church, I get a little note, which I don't know where this one went either. I think people at the 9 o'clock are stealing things, right? I don't know what's happening. But I got this note from Kristen, who over the years here, I have come to see a particular gifting in her that whenever things are going on here, like when God's doing something, she doesn't know about it, but yet, like God prompts her heart to pray for certain things that are just like, wow, how did you know to pray that now, right? So after last week's sermon, she wrote this note that essentially it said this, and it's somewhere in this room. I just don't know where. It said, do you see? No, that's not it. Oh. Thank you, Jess. Yeah, that's, this one actually says, literally it says, hug someone. That's not the note. That's not the note that she gave me. But the note that she gave me said, it said the straight and narrow path. And then she like fleshed it out. She says, broad is the road, and broad and wide is the road that leads to destruction, but straight and narrow is the path that leads to life. right? And then she said, Brian, I just feel like God, just as you were talking, just really like pronouncedly put this on my heart, right? And coming from her, given the history that I have with her, I'm like, okay. And at the end of it, she said, regarding race relations here. I was like, okay, because that's exactly, she didn't know this, I knew it, that's exactly where we're going this week. And then you just, via the Spirit of God, named my third path for me because I couldn't figure it out, right? So all that to say that the things that we're going to talk about this morning, I believe, make sense generally. Like, you could take this stuff and teach it anywhere, in any church, any civic group would benefit from hearing the content of what we're going to talk about. But beyond that, confirmed last week by her, I really believe that this is something specific for us to lean into today and in the days to come, right? So this is a word, I believe, for our church, and it has implications depending on where we go. Okay, so with that, I'm gonna open up here. We're gonna use our dry erase board here, thanks to the tech guys who did their tech thing this week and made that happen. Thanks, Paul and the team. So I'm gonna lead in with this, right? We already said it, that Jesus said, straight and narrow is the path that leads to life, and few find it. Okay, that means that there, as according to a percentage of people, there are a few people that will find the path that leads to life. But broad is the way that leads to destruction, and percentage-wise, many will find those alternative paths. Okay, now if that doesn't cause you to pause for a moment and just say, wow, God, am I on the right path? Am I following you in the ways that you want me to follow you now? I don't know what will, right? And then Proverbs 14:12 takes it the next step. There's a way that seems right to a man, but the end is destruction. Which means that there are some of us, and outside these walls, even inside these walls, in certain areas of our lives, we're on a path that is leading us to destruction, and if we were challenged on it, we would say, no, you're wrong. I'm on the right path. I'm doing the right thing. And we would defend it, right? We would be on the broad path that ultimately is not the straight and narrow, but it's the broad path. God isn't compelling us in that direction, but we're going in that direction, and if we keep on it, certain parts of our life will literally experience dysfunction and destruction. We're on it, but if someone called us on it, we would say, no, you're wrong, I'm right. And we would really believe it. That's scary to me, right? It just causes me to pause and say, like, God, I need you to just speak and lead clearly, because I and we are prone to just being misled and to be led astray, right? So now, with that in mind, let's pick up where we left off with Joseph last week, right? We're in the story of Joseph, week number 2 of Black History Month, and Joseph is our prime character. And what we saw last week is that Joseph is living out a story that is, we'll just say, it's kind of founded upon a foundation of pain, right? Joseph is having and had some horrible things happen to him, okay? And now regarding this pain, there is, right, there is a path that is available to him, and it's called the straight and narrow path, and this is the path that the Lord would have him navigate forward in this pain that he finds himself in, and that ultimately, and even along the way, he will experience a full, abounding, and overflowing sense of life. That life would be overflowing and cascading if he remains on this path regarding everything that he's going through. But Joseph has some other options if he chooses not to stay on the straight and narrow path, right? Here's one option on the broad, right? This is the broad path over here. Anything not on the straight and narrow is the broad. Joseph could choose to walk down the wide road of apathy. And he can just continue to meander down that road. Apathy essentially also means to give up, which is an option, right? Because consider, Joseph is an individual. has been through his story that we talked about last week. Let's just put it like this. Here's the picture I want to give you. Joseph has been sliced 1,000 times, right? And when we get literally sliced with a knife, we leak, right? And what comes out of us is blood. And if you're sliced enough times and you leak enough blood, you literally are going to physically die, right? Now, Joseph has been emotionally, spiritually, he has been just mentally, he's been wounded and sliced through his story 1,001 different times. And as all of these slices happen to him, in all the things that have happened to him, you leak, right? The life that God pours into us leaks out of us. The energy that he gives us leaks out of us, right? And it can lead you to a place where you are depleted. And when you're depleted, the path of throwing your hands up and say, I give up, I'm done, I can't take this anymore, it's an attractive path, right? And now the question is, was Joseph, in the various parts of the story that we've read, was he ever tempted to give up? Well, the honest answer is we don't know. We don't see in the record anything that would compel us to say yes. But here's my suspicion, right? This is kind of where we left off last week, was where Joseph has one glimmer of hope and an opportunity and a friend who's in the prison who's going to be released and restored back to his position serving Pharaoh. There's a glimmer of hope that maybe Joseph's story will get out. Maybe he'll get sprung from this dungeon. Maybe he'll go free. But what we learn is that his friend forgot about him. And then Joseph, and then nothing happens for 2 more years, and then the story picks up. My guess is that at some point in that 2 years, given everything that he'd already been through, that Joseph had what some Christians through the years have called a dark night of the soul, where he says, God, I can't take it. I don't know that you're even here anymore. It seems like you've left the building. I give up. I'm done. Did he have those moments? I'm guessing that he did. But through those moments, if he had them, here's what we know. He never acted on them. He never chose the wide road of apathy that leads to destruction. He stayed on the straight and narrow path. Now, there's another option on the other side that's the essentially kind of the antithesis of giving up, and that is the wide road of violence. And the wide road of violence makes tremendous sense. Right, because here's the thing. If you've been cut 1,001 different times by a certain group of people or persons that are around you, right, and if that doesn't have any signs of letting up or stopping, well, if I do violence to them of such a significant proportion, maybe they will then either die or stop doing the violence to me that they're doing to me, right? If they're going to do this, if I do this, maybe they'll stop, right? You get so angry about the things that are being done to you that you just want to erupt out of that, and hoping out of that eruption, maybe the craziness will stop. Now, here's what we know about Joseph. We're going to talk about this next week. This will make more sense. Joseph is a top-notch leader. I heard one consultant describe him in a meeting that I had with him. He described Joseph as the greatest leader outside of Jesus in all of the scriptures. Brother, get some stuff done, right? So now, Joseph, who is an incredible leader, finds himself through his story in two, we'll call them, revolution-ripe environments, right? The first is he's in Potiphar's house as a slave with other household slaves there. Now, if you're looking for a group of people that might be ready for an insurrection, it's slaves that are ready for that, right? It can't get much worse than that. And so you put in that environment a catalytic leader who can give voice to the injustice, who can stir the fires of anger. Well, you've got a potential revolution on your hands in Potiphar's house. Maybe you can kill everybody, kill Potiphar, kill his wife, kill everybody, and then get outside the walls and see how much you can do. But there's a fighting chance there. But here's what we know. Joseph never took the opportunity to use his giftings to lead a revolution in Potiphar's house. Similarly in the prison, right? You want to look for a place where revolution is ripe among certain peoples, it would be in a prison. where a lot of the people who were there with him have probably been unjustly accused, and they're suffering. They've got no hope. Joseph could stand up, give voice to their pain, give them a compelling option forward regarding violence. Hey, let's get back at the man or the whatever, right? You could have a revolution on your hands there, but here's what we know. In prison, Joseph never uses his giftings in that direction. He doesn't go violent. But what we do see is that Joseph stays on the straight and narrow path that leads to life. I want to direct your attention to Genesis chapter 40, starting in verse 14, right? We get a little glimpse into this, and we read this passage last week, and it's so powerful, right? It's so fitting, we got to read it because it's instructive for us. Genesis chapter 40, verses 14 and 15, this is when Joseph is speaking to his friend in prison, who is about to be restored to his position as a high-ranking servant of Pharaoh. Joseph knows this is going to happen because this guy has a dream. Joseph interprets it. This guy doesn't know it yet. And Joseph takes an opportunity to have a last-minute conversation with him before he kind of gets out of here, right? So Genesis chapter 40, verse 14. Joseph says to his friend, "But when all goes well with you," meaning when you get out of these prison walls and you're restored to Pharaoh and serving him, "remember me and show me kindness. Mention me to Pharaoh and get me out of this prison. For I was forcibly carried off from the land of the Hebrews." Okay, hold on there. So Joseph says to his friend, "Friend, when you're sitting in front of Pharaoh, here's what you got to tell him and declare this to him, that I, Joseph, was stolen." Don't say to him that I, Joseph, had things stolen from me. I literally, my person was stolen and I was brought here to Egypt. You declare that to the highest ranking official in the land of Egypt. You go tell him what I said. So what Joseph is wanting to do is to shine a light on the injustice so that it can be seen. And courageously and unapologetically so, he wants to shine that light, right? And then he continues. "And even here," meaning in this prison, "I have done nothing to deserve being put in a dungeon." Says, "I'm innocent. The things that I was accused of," right, "this sin that this wife of my slave owner accused me of, I did nothing wrong. And you go tell that to Pharaoh. Let's shine a light on and draw this out into the light so that we can see it for what it is." Now, in doing that, he is clearly not apathetic. He is not given up. He is maintaining hope and seeking to do that which is good and right for him to do. He is rejecting the path of giving up. And similarly, he seems to be in this time advocating a path of justice that is not violent. Meaning this, he could have said to his friend who's getting sprung out of jail, who's going to go serve Pharaoh, he could have said this, "Hey friend, here's what I want you to do. I want you to go talk to Pharaoh and you tell Pharaoh this and quote me on it. You tell Pharaoh, I hope that your pyramid is almost finished, because I, Joseph, am going to be sending you there soon," end quote. Doesn't say that, right? He has every reason to be angry, but he doesn't say that. He simply wants to draw out and into the light the truth. Now, this is what I love about the scriptures, right? God is just ruggedly honest with us. Here's what we do know. Not sure if Joseph struggled with apathy. I'm guessing that he was tempted to. But what we do know is that he flirted with violence. The path of violence was somewhat attractive to him. And to see that, I want to take you to Genesis chapter 42. And we're going to start in verse 7. Oh, by the way, here's the note from the lady last week about the straight and narrow path. Just found it. Okay. Now, Genesis chapter 42, starting in verse 7. Just a little context here. Genesis 42, 7, fast forward through the story. Joseph is out of prison. We'll talk about this next week. Now he is actually the second ranking official in all of Egypt, just below Pharaoh. He's kind of running the show. We'll talk about that next week. But as the one who was running the show, Joseph knew that a famine was coming, and for 7 years he stores up grain all through Egypt, and now that the 7 years are over, Egypt and probably like that whole region of the world is in a famine, and so people groups from all around Egypt hear Egypt has grain, and they're sending their emissaries to go get food so that they can actually keep alive in the places where these people are coming from. And it just so happens that Joseph's family is part of the famine, and they send the brothers, Joseph's father sends his brothers back to get some food. Here's where we pick it up in 42 verse 7. Keep in mind, Joseph, where he's been, has not seen nor heard from his brothers from the horrific beginnings of the story we talked about last week. Verse 7. His brothers show up before him as he's administrating the food distribution. Here we go. As soon as Joseph saw his brothers, he recognized them. Ouch. But he pretended to be a stranger and spoke harshly to them. "Where do you come from?" he asked. "From the land of Canaan," they replied, "to buy food." Although Joseph recognized his brothers, they did not recognize him. Then he remembered his dreams about them and said to them, "You are spies. You have come to see where our land is unprotected." "No, my lord," they answered. "Your servants have come to buy food. We are the sons of one man. Your servants are honest men, not spies." Right? You just got to love the irony here. His brothers are declaring to Joseph, of all people, that they are, quote, honest men. To which Joseph has the right to say, "Oh, really? Let's talk about that for a minute. Let's flesh that one out a little bit," right? If you are prone to violence, well, this might be stoking your fires maybe a little bit, right? Then Joseph responds, "No," he said to them, "you have come to see where our land is unprotected." But they replied, "Your servants were 12 brothers, the son of one man," right? The first time he gets to hear about his father, whom he loves and who loves him, in such a long time, that's got to spark some things deep in your psyche, right? "We are sons of one man who lives in the land of Canaan. The youngest is now with our father, and one is no more." You don't say. I wonder what happened to the one who is no more, right? If you are prone to violence, this is going to spark some stuff in you, right? And Joseph says to them, "It is just as I told you. You are spies, and this is how you will be tested. As surely as Pharaoh lives, you will not leave this place unless your youngest brother, who's back home, comes here. Send one of your number to get your brother. The rest of you will be kept in prison so that your words may be tested to see if you are telling the truth. If you are not, then as surely as Pharaoh lives, you are spies." And then he put them in custody for 3 days. Flirting with violence. Sticks his brothers in prison for 3 days. How do you like it? Later on in the story, he'll eventually let his brothers go back home. And then after they've exhausted all their food supplies, they come back again. And then Joseph messes with them one more time, teetering on the broad path of violence. But he continues to reject it. He maintains the straight and narrow path which leads to life. Now, regarding the straight and narrow path, let's talk about that a little bit. Because clearly, Joseph is feeling anger. And it is entirely appropriate for him to feel anger. To be angry is not to sin, right? The Apostle Paul tells us in Ephesians 4:26, "In your anger, don't sin." When Jesus walks into the temple and he sees what's become of his father's house, he is greatly angered and starts flipping tables over and cashing over and casting out money changers because they have done something horrifying in that place. They have turned it into something far less, right? So we know that anger is oftentimes it's mandatory, right? There are things that happen all around us that if we don't get angry about them, then that would maybe lead us to conclude there's something wrong with us, right? There are anger-worthy things that happen, and Joseph has experienced anger. Now, on the flip side, right, as he stays on the straight and narrow, my guess is that he has also experienced weariness because of the death by a thousand cuts, right? He has had opportunity to leak out of him, and that will make a brother or a sister weary, right? And he has experienced that. But yet in his anger, here's what Joseph does. He takes action, and the action that he takes is righteous action. It is good. It is redemptive. It is a good thing to declare injustice and shine a light on it so that people can see it, right? What Martin Luther King Jr. would call direct action or nonviolent resistance is a beautiful thing, and it's a redemptive tool, and it springs from the wells of righteous anger, right? And in the same way that in his weariness leads him to the place where the biblical word would be perseverance, but we'll just say, because I don't want to try to spell that in front of you, he just keeps going, right? I can't talk and spell at the same time. I know that, right? So, but brother, in his weariness, doesn't cash out. He keeps going. He keeps going. He perseveres. Now, here's a point I want to make about this, and I don't have much time to make this, but just dwell on this for a little while. Here's what I know to be true, right? Last week we talked about in this pain that Joseph was in, the first step is that you've got to mourn, right? Mourning is the first thing that you've got to do. Here's why that is so important. Because for an individual who's going through horrific things, if you do not start with mourning, right? If that is not the place where you begin, but if you move right to anger, if you go straight to anger and you dwell there, here's what is going to happen. You're going to veer off into the land of violence. And if you choose in your circumstances not to experience mourning, but you go straight to weariness and you stay weary, it's going to lead you to the broad path of giving up and apathy. And here's why I know that to be true. Because remember, we talked about this last week. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be what? Comforted. They shall be paracleted. And we talked about that word, and the paraclete literally is the Spirit of God who comes alongside us, right? Who girds us up, who comforts us, who heals us, who strengthens us. When we go through horrible things and the Spirit of God comes alongside of us, in our anger, the Spirit of God directs our anger in righteous, straight and narrow kinds of ways. And in our mourning, as the Spirit of God comes alongside of us, he engages us with our weariness, and he propels us and provokes us to keep going, keep going, keep going. But if you don't allow the Lord to come alongside you, which he can only do as we mourn before him, then we're doomed. We are absolutely doomed to the paths of destruction. We will either go violent in our anger, or we will go apathetic and we will give up in our weariness. So we must be the people who go to the place of grief and lament and sadness so that the Lord can come alongside us so that we can keep on the straight and narrow path so that we can experience the fruitfulness and the joy of life. Now, the same options that are available to Joseph are the same options that are available to my brothers and sisters of African descent who have in this country experienced pain upon pain, thousand cut upon thousand cut in their daily living. Same options available. And in this church, for so many of us with a fair complexion, melanin poor folks like me, right? There's so many of us who are so like brought into this thing, this injustice, right? That we want to walk alongside our brothers and sisters. If we also do not choose the right path, then we may move in a direction of destruction also. But the same options are available for us as we seek to move forward
regarding all the things that we talked about last week, right? Now, this week, I was in the office, I walked in, and Katika Brandon, Pastor Brandon's wife, was in the office putting lunch sacks together for Portage Path, right? Something she's been doing for years, love it. And we just started talking, and talking about things like what we were talking about on Sunday, and she was, I asked her a couple of questions, and she started to share, and as she was sharing just kind of her own personal experiences and stories, I was asking her questions, I said, Katika, can you hold that thought a second? I need to go grab a notebook, and I came back with my notebook, and I just started taking notes, right? Because she was just saying some things that I needed to write down, right? Regarding this pain environment that so many of us live in, regarding the 1,001 cuts that leak life from us, I had some questions for her, and she started answering them, right? And here's some things that Katika said to me that, again, remind us that the pain is not something in the deep history of our country. It's something in the very present experience of our country, right? So from Katika, and she gave me permission to share this, right? So Katika is a young woman in Akron, walking in an East Akron neighborhood, right? A fellow walks out on his front porch, sees them, doesn't know them, knows something about them because of the complexion of their skin, but has never met them. This gentleman, I'm not going to call him a gentleman, this guy from his front porch yells to them, "Get out of here, you!" I can't say it, right? It's a word that ought not to be said. "Get out of here, you," fill in the blank. Never met him, doesn't know Katika from anyone else, never had any experience with her, right? That's a cut right there. You're going to leak. You're going to leak because of that. Like, what is it about me that causes that man to attack me, to do violence towards me with his words, to be so offensive? Why would he do that? Well, clearly it was because of the complexion of her skin, period. Right? That's messed up. If that doesn't provoke anger in you, there's something wrong with you, right? It should rightly rile us up a bit, right? And it continues, right? So there are points where this happened where she showed up to an apartment showing, right? There's an apartment for rent. She calls, set up the appointment, meets the real estate agent. And then when she meets the real estate agent at the apartment building, the real estate agent sees her for the first time. And then, sorry, that apartment is no longer for rent. But I just talked to you this morning, and what happened to, just not for rent. Saw the guy moving out downstairs. Could we go look at that? No, that one's not for rent either. Now, as a white man, I have read about redlining. I've sought to understand that, to get my heart around it. I've never experienced it, where because of my complexion, there are certain places where I'm allowed to live, where I'm wanted to live, and there are certain places where I'm not. And when you experience that, that's a cut, and you'll leak from that cut. Even to this day, right, this is something that has happened to Katika several times within this last calendar year, that she would go to tea with a friend or go to a restaurant with a mixed group, right? She being the person of color, her friend or friends being white. And as they're there, Katika will have a question for the server. "Hey, have a question about your whatever, whatever." And then when the server begins to answer the question, doesn't look at her, but addresses the answer to the question to her white companion. Like, what is that? Why? Right? There's something still going on in so many of us in this country that we see things messed up, right? And that's the kind of thing that will cut you when it continues to happen, right? And Katika had to raise a son, and she had to say to her son, and many of you guys know her son, she would have to say from early on, right? As soon as you start putting thoughts together, she'd have to raise him and say, "Son, you must obey the law, like the letter of the law. And even as you are obeying the letter of the law, you've got to be very cautious." Now, for me, as a white guy with my white kids, I just say, "Hey, guys, don't be stupid, right? Don't be dumb." And that's kind of where I can stop, because if I know that they're obeying the law, they're going to be safe.
But her son, because of the complexion, skin tone difference, even when they're obeying the law, it's not necessarily safe for them in the eyes of the law, right? And we affirm the law, we affirm policemen, but there's something going on in some, and it's happening a little bit too much. And now Katika has to pass that on now to the next generation of her grandkids, because it's still happening. That's a cut, and you're going to leak some life because of that, right? So add her experience, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. But add her experience currently and historically on to what has happened in this country for 400 years. Add that on to all the things that are happening across our culture that now we're just starting to see on the news because of recording device technology, and it will mess with you, and it will provoke you. It has the opportunity to provoke you to some wide path options out of your pain. Either it's not getting any better, I give up, or I am so angry I can't take it anymore, I've got to explode, and violence comes out, right? And Katika would say, she'll say this to you, she said it to me this week, that before Jesus entered into her life, she was veering down this path. Not necessarily like she was like beating anybody up. Maybe she did. We could ask her. I don't know. But she like her heart was gravitating and like moving fast down the path of violence, wanting to do violence to people like me. And to that I say, I get it. And I would be there with you if that were me. Now, regarding the path of violence, the iconic figure in American history that would best exemplify the path of violence is a guy by the name of Malcolm X, right? Everybody has heard of Malcolm X. Malcolm X is the guy that says, right, his message is we've got to respond to violence, right? You're going to do violence to us. We've got to respond to that violence with violence. We've got to take up arms and resist. Now, Malcolm X in some Christian circles is vilified. Now, I want to be really careful about that, right? Let's put some empathy on the flesh of Brother Malcolm and see why he went down the wide road of violence. And maybe it will make sense why he did, right? When Malcolm, this is his history, right? Malcolm is a young boy in the South, frequently had hooded riders riding horses, brandishing shotguns and other arsenaled weapons, riding around his house, calling for his father to come out so that they could menace his father, right? That happened to him as a young boy. As a four-year-old, he had the windows in his house smashed out by these kinds of white supremacist people, right? Fast forward a little bit. His house moved to the north, actually. This happened in the north. His house was set on fire by a racist mob. And then when the all-white emergency crew shows up, right, the fire department, we've got a fireman here who's an awesome guy, that he would never do this, but when the all-white fire department showed up to their house, they just stood and watched it burn, decided not to do anything about this fire. Why? Because Malcolm's dad was a man who was speaking out against injustice. In positions of power, don't like it when people call us to task for the injustice that we're propagating, and so the positions of power respond to that violently, right? And so Malcolm's family is experiencing this. They're just trying to call out injustice, and they're facing more violence at the hands of the white oppressors because of it, right? This is Malcolm's experience. And then fast forward. His father is killed in what would be written down legally as a freak streetcar accident, right? But I read Malcolm's biography. I read the circumstances around his father's death, and boy, it just really seems like a homicide. It seems like those kinds of guys, like the hooded riders who were menacing his family, it seems like his dad was murdered. I'm just saying, it's what it seems like. And that's what his family believed, right? And then what happened next? Well, his mom, literally, because of the murder of his father, his mother goes insane. And his mom has to go and get checked into a mental institution. Literally. Now, if that were me, I'm just being straight honest with us. If that were me, I tell ya, I don't know if I'm going the path of mourning. I might bypass that, go straight to anger, and I'm going to veer into the land of violence. Now, Malcolm, he was violent with his words. He called for uprisings. He himself, I don't know that he ever got violent with anybody, right? But I might be going violent with some people if that were my history, right? I'm just saying, I empathize with him. Here's what Malcolm says. Malcolm says, usually when people are sad, they don't do anything. When people mourn, right? And we shed some tears last week, and rightly so. But Malcolm says, when people mourn this stuff, they don't do anything. They just cry over their condition. But, he says, when they get angry, they bring about change. Now, as much as I empathize with Malcolm, and on so many levels I respect him, as much as I empathize and respect him because of his story, right? What I most clearly want to bow to is when Jesus says that this path leads to destruction. This is not the Jesus path. So while I empathize with him, I say, oh, Malcolm, oh, man, oh, you could have been so catalytic. You could have been so powerfully redemptive if, right? I would long to see Malcolm go back and just walk down the straight and narrow path that leads to life, because he could have been so powerful, but I understand why he went this route, right? Jesus says the straight and narrow is the way that leads to life. There is a way, Malcolm, that seems right to a man. Oh, it seems so right. You would defend yourself, you would defend this path, and you clearly did, but the end of this path is destruction. And literally, Malcolm was murdered by the very people that he was most closely associated with. The nation of Islam, right? History is a little bit shady here, but I believe the nation of Islam had him murdered. When you hang around with violent people, violence is going to happen, and it did, right? And it makes me sad that that happened to him, and it should make all of us sad, right? So we have to reject the path of violence. But the other path that's available to us, right, given this struggle of our history and the current context that we're in, is just, I give up. It's been 400 years. It just seems like change is so slow. I give up. And when you've been in the context of pain and difficulty for so long, sometimes you just want that pain and that difficulty to get numbed. And there are ways to numb it and just take it away. 8 hours. Just take it away for 8 hours, right? But then when you're done, you want to take it away for another 8 hours. And then another, and it leads you to a place where you've given up and essentially you're depleted and you're done, right? You can medicate pain, but it takes the life out of you fully. But here's the thing. I get it. If you're in a position of pain and difficulty and you give up, you just want to medicate the pain, I'm just being honest, friends. I would have gone that route too. I would have vacillated between violence and apathy, apathy and violence. I would have ping-ponged back and forth without the aggressive hand of God leading me in a different direction, and we all would too. So we don't cast stones at anybody on either of these paths, but what we do is we want to declare the truth, that both of those paths lead to destruction, right? If you're on the path of apathy, we've got a welfare system that will take care of you, right? And welfare is appropriate on so many levels. But the problem is, right, and so many of us, we don't like welfare and we'll critique it. The problem is that we as a nation, in the injustice that we have propagated, we have created a system that systematically demoralizes certain groups of our population. So don't be surprised if after demoralizing them for so long that they just give up. Don't be surprised. Right? I get it. I would be there too. Right? But there's a way that seems right to a man, but it leads to destruction. Nothing changes when you choose the path of giving up. Your voice is essentially silenced, and that is a tragedy. But in opposition to the wide road of violence and the wide road of giving up is the straight and narrow path. And the great iconic figure of that, right, we all know who that is. Dr. King, the icon of the straight and narrow path in our nation's history. Absolutely beautiful, right? In his pain, death by 1,001 cuts. Dr. King felt it, right? The things that happened to Malcolm, so many similar things happened to Dr. King.
but he engaged it differently, right? He goes straight to mourning, and he laments this. Before God, he laments what's happening. And then rightly, his anger is stirred, right? And in his stirred anger, the paraclete, the Spirit of God, comes alongside of him and keeps his anger in the redemptive confines of the straight and narrow. And Dr. King advocates for direct action, for non-violent resistance. He seeks to shine a light publicly and vocally on the injustice so that we can all just begin to draw it out and know, let's just all know what's going on, right? And Dr. King says, literally, he said this, he said, pain and anger must come out of a human being. Where there is pain and anger being stuffed away, it must and it will come out. Now, there are a whole bunch of religious leaders in the South with a fair complexion like me that were saying, Dr. King, stop it. Stop it. Stop doing all the things that you're doing. Just wait. Give it time. The system will change over time. Stop talking about it. Stop doing things about it. But Dr. King says, no, here's what you don't understand. One, we've been waiting for a long time and it hasn't changed. And two, pain and anger must come out. Either it's going to come out in healthy, redemptive, catalytic ways, or it's going to come out in violent ways, but it will come out one or the others, right? And so Dr. King, he just starts provoking and organizing direct, nonviolent, resistant action. And so he and his group start doing things called sit-ins. And then they start organizing marches, right? And then he's giving speeches all over the place. And then they're organizing boycotts. Because when you start hitting somebody in their pocketbook, people start listening, right? And then they're organizing prayer meetings, getting people together. He's resisting injustice, nonviolently so, taking the way of God to the destination of God and doing it in beautiful, beautiful ways, right? And so we celebrate him as we should. And then he rejects, right? Did Dr. King feel weary? No doubt. There were dark nights of the soul where he thought, why am I spending my life in this direction? But the paraclete comes alongside of him as he mourns side by side with Jesus, right? The paraclete comes alongside and causes him and provokes him and encourages him to persevere. And he keeps going and he keeps going. And ultimately, right, Dr. King said this. He said, there's nothing that you could do to me to make me love you any less, right? There is no more beautiful nor powerful path for catalytic change than that. And that leads to life. And for the sake of that path, he ultimately laid his own life down. That's beautiful. That's why we continue to honor him and celebrate him and talk about him. Now, here's the thing that I want us to see real quick. Is it those who have chosen the path of violence and those that have chosen the path of apathy, both of them attack the person and the persons on the straight and narrow path, right? And Dr. King was like a punching bag for Malcolm. Malcolm just loved to mess with Dr. King. Here's one of the many things that Malcolm said about Dr. King. Malcolm says, the white man pays Reverend Martin Luther King, subsidizes Reverend Martin Luther King so that Reverend Martin Luther King can continue to teach the Negroes to be defenseless. That's what you mean by nonviolent, be defenseless, right? So people who are advocating for change but from a different direction are hurling stones at him and just making fun and poking fun at him and seeking to cut his legs out from under him. And from this side, right, there's no real historical figures that we know that have chosen apathy because they've given up, but there were many people from this side who would look at Dr. King and say, who do you think you are, Mr. Big Stuff? You don't represent me. You can't change anything. Sit down and shut up. Why are you doing anything? And why do they say that? Why? Because on some level, there's a guilt that settles in when you're doing nothing and somebody is spending themselves for doing something, and then it lashes out in essentially violent words and sometimes violent action. So Dr. King getting it from both sides. And maybe in this room, there are some of us that regarding the story of reconciliation between black and white in our current context, right? I know some brothers and sisters with darker complexion whose other brothers and sisters with a darker complexion make fun of them and jeer them for attending this church, right? They're getting it from both sides, right? And so we just need to know these things, right? Because God has a path for us. It is a straight and narrow path that leads to life, and few find it. And that's the path that he has for us, all of us. But there are so many outside of these walls, and Lord willing, I hope not inside these walls, that will be prone to the path of violence, whether with actions or with words. It can happen with both. Or prone to the path of just, I give up, I'm done, right? And there will be times when some of you in this room say, I'm done, I give up, it's not getting any better. It's not an option for us. It is not an option for us. We must follow Jesus down the straight and narrow road, stepping in the footsteps of Jesus and of Dr. King, following in the path of Joseph, trusting the Spirit of God to lead us to the place of life, as all these other voices call us to do something very, very different. Let's pray. Father in heaven, oh, there's a song that goes, we need you, oh, we need you. Every hour, we need you. And Father, there are some times where we, in our foolishness, don't feel that. And we feel like we've got it all together. We're taking care of it. Father, forgive us for that. But Father, there are other times where we just more keenly are aware that we need thee, oh, we need thee. Every hour, we need thee. Father, regarding this issue, this reconciliation work that we believe that you want to do here, Father, we need you to protect us with fierceness from stepping outside of your beautiful path. Protect us from moving out into the broad roads that lead to destruction. Father, in our anger, would you cause us to move towards righteous action? In our weariness, would you move us to perseverance? Father, would you come alongside of us as we mourn the things that are mourn-worthy? And would you lead us on, Father, to the life, beautiful places that you have for us? Lead all of us there. Help us to lose not a one and to bring an army with us. God, we ask you to do it for your name's sake, please. It's in Jesus' name that we all said, amen.